Things right for the people, belting it, the spirit, out beyond her voice, flaming her voice hoarse beyond linear limits. Listen very closely, carefully. Focus on her breasts as she leads you by the arm through an ever-changing non-linear maze of stories, connections, names, human passions. You'll need this focus point to surrender. She, Jessie Kennan, will lead you, skipping and dancing into the heart of all things, of all matters. She has lived and danced upon this liquid, lusty path, has lived deep, hard, soft in the not so clear, clean, pure waters of humanity long before and will long after us. So surrender to the mad woman, to the senile bag lady, to the Peter Pan child. Fall into her time warp hole. Fall into Jessie. And you'll be falling into wisdom deep and warm.
Thank you, Linda. I have to ask my, oh, thank you. Thank you, Frank. That I truly, truly love that poem. Maki,
yeah.
I have to ask our engineer a question. Is this close enough for singing? You don't really have to be on the mic.
You could, yeah, try it. I think I got it.
Okay. So, you know, the band always has to tune up and sharpen up and all those things. So it's great to be here. I'm too excited just being here with Linda, Mikey, you know, and Frank. It's the gorgeous lights and the whole, well, but I got to do my part, right? So I think I'll play a song that I haven't played.
You have to talk on the mic. Oh,
okay.
You can sing off of it.
I do sort of like a dance at the piano. One time they said they liked the videographer who does all the poets for years said, I loved your dance. And I knew it was a video where I was doing the piano. I said, no, you've got me mixed up. He said, no, I mean, I love your dance. So I dance all over this. How am I going to do that and speak into the mic? I'll try. But I've been sort of like, that's free-spirited, I guess, all my life. Now, this is a song I haven't played for a while, but I want to start with the blues. I'm trying to think now, what did inspire this song? Probably some lover. Well, it's called, Oh, Baby, Don't Buy It. Actually, the phrase came from something else, but Baby, Don't Buy It, which has a version recorded by Miss D, wonderful singer, also. I'm not what you would call downright mysterious, 'cause I'll tell you like it is, which is life is serious. If they told you, I would cry, cry, cry for it. Baby, don't you buy it. Well, now, baby, don't you buy it. Baby, don't you buy it. I got one life to live until the day I grow old. I'm gonna treat that life like the purest gold. When I die, don't wanna be between a dream and a lie. I got one thing in this whole wide world. what I can call my own, and that's my life. It ain't out on rental, and it ain't out on loan. Baby, if there's gonna be any love between us, I don't want that love ever to be frivolous. I don't want you ever to love me casually. If they told you, if they told you I'd cry for it, baby, don't you buy it. Well, now, baby, don't you buy it. One life to live to the day I don't grow old. Gonna treat that life with is so it were the purest gold. Let me take that just one more time. One thing I can call my own, and that's my life. It ain't out on rental, and it ain't out on loan. Baby, don't you buy it. Baby, don't you buy it. I knew I would almost remember that. Baby, Don't You Buy It had another meaning with, actually, wrote it when they had the Watts riots, and I was saying, baby, don't buy it. They call it a riot. But somehow I stole my own, you know, title to that. But it also reminds me of a dear pianist friend that was brought over. But I knew all writers and not musicians when I was first composing in Berkeley 30 years ago and more. And so it was a luxury point. When you're a poet, poets are a dime a dozen. You know, you're not a star. But I was the only musician. There were Al Young, all who became very, you know, great today. They're all the writer friends. I was the different one, the composer. And so they would call these well-known musicians like Lonnie Hewitt. He was called the best by Leonard Bernstein. He said the best jazz pianist who died too young. But Lonnie, big, deep voice, wrote big hit songs. Well, he was brought over to my house. You must meet the composer, Jesse Beagle. You know, and he said later, I didn't know what to make all that. Musical comedy, you know. Later, I wasn't getting down. But he did, then years later, it was really cute. It was like an apology. We became very good friends. And when 20 years later, when I lived where I am now in Berkeley, he came over ostensibly to play my piano, but it was to foist two cats upon me. They had two kittens they had to get rid of. Anyway, he came and played the piano. And he said, you know, and took him all these years to say, he said, it isn't that I don't like your music, but I just don't relate to anything. It isn't. He was with Cal Jader's pianist. You know what I mean? That's certain rhythm. He said, you're like the painters that were the impressionist. You're like an impressionist songwriter. He said, but I dig your titles. It wasn't the music. I mean, and man, he heard that and he wanted that title. Baby, don't buy it.
You may do the titles. Frank said, well, you're not going to hear me, are you? Frank just said that he does the titles for all of Mikey's drawings. And
another great title maker. Yeah, well. Ruthie's Inn. Oh, there's a big story around all these songs, of course. Well, Ruthie's Inn is where I met for one thing, and had dinner with and other people with the owner of the place. Ruthie's Inn was the place where all of the really, really heart of the black community went to hear the very best singers before they hit it in the white clubs, played at Ruthie's Inn on San Pablo Avenue. And I wrote my song is really to honor all places that give people an opportunity, a chance for their music to be heard. But it was Ruthie's birthday, actually, so I did go down and sing it on her birthday. And I started to tell you, the singer that we all had dinner with that was there, he almost couldn't sing because we went to dinner and they filled him with Southern food. He kept saying, I can't go on and sing if I eat all this. And when the place we went to dinner, they'd cooked all the home greens, you know, and all this. but then when he got in the white world, that was Bobby Blue Bland. But right when I knew him, he got in the white clubs. And then immediately, just to tell you a little of the commercial world and what happens, Frank, you know, in the commercial world, that as soon as he signed by the white club, they give him a great big car, like, you know, one of the, either a, not, maybe not a Mercedes, whatever. And give him a big contract. Well, he, even at that time, he had like 10 days home a year. He was traveling with this. So at that point, and then he goes to, gets all this better stuff and gets to sing in the white clubs, and then they really owned his soul, because then he had very little time home, you know. But Ruthie's Inn.
Frank said Ruthie's Inn is like Lover.
Uh-huh.
It's where all the people go before.
Oh, yeah. Ruthie's Inn was, there were black clubs in Oakland where I heard Lou Rawls, and I did get acquainted with him before he hit the, he was well known, but before he hit the white clubs. You know, people would go there in Oakland. But Ruthie's Inn was sort of like the in place. If you were anyone, they didn't follow B.B. King. Their blues singer was Bobby Blue Bland, and that was that. You know, and Esther, little Esther known one time, Esther Phillips, I was her guest there. She met with her and her lovely agent because they were looking at my songs. And Esther was great. So it was just a little, they built it themselves, the people that owned that. Can't think of Ruthie's husband's name. But anyway. A legend in its own time, Ruthie's Inn, Ruthie's Inn, where players and singers travel all around this world to Ruthie, baby, how you been? Then they tell her all their troubles, and she'd listen with a smile. And if you were down there then in Ruthie's Inn, she might throw a smile your way. And then you'd hear her say, have changed one tear to a smile, it's been worthwhile. And if I see a couple and they're feeling down and out, you know I'll shout. Wherever the music is playing, you've got a right to be alive. And if I see a couple and they're dancing apart, and then I see them dancing heart to heart, you know it's been worthwhile. Everyone has a place in the sun every once in a while. Every man can be king for a day, every once in a while. In Ruthie's myself fond of that song for some reason. I had a very young band came up to me, today you'd say, oh, wow. Out of the heart of Richmond, slick, leather-dressed, very, very young rock band, hard. Mm-hmm. And they came up to me and they said, we like what you're doing. Seconds, it was years ago, right? But seconds playing one note next to another, and they're just saying, man, They asked me to be their piano player anyway. It was really cute. I couldn't play with others, but... Oh, and let's see. No, it's a whole special talent, to play with the band. When I played once at the biggest blues thing I did, I was with two famous bands, and I didn't realize it till I got up to perform, or I would have been scared to death. They had put the two most popular at the time bands with me in the middle, alone. And the guy who set this up didn't tell me to afterwards. He said, I just wanted to see if you could do it. But he was really featuring himself as a saxophone player, Hemmings. But he had secured what was then. When you say the best, it means playing in the most clubs, most popular. Okay. It was, and I don't remember under, I'm sorry, the names. But anyway, it was the best rock, rock and roll, modern. And it was the best blues, but blues doesn't mean old time. It was young people playing, the modern blues. Like they would play the old blues songs and stuff. They asked me to get up and sing, and I couldn't do it. They lost their lead singer that night to heroin. But anyway, I don't know what I was relating to that. I lost myself. Well, where we began to get down to Ruth, that was a club called Your Place 2, and it will come back to me what that was about. But, that was really something. When you come out, the first thing I did, and as a performer like that type of performer in music, Mikey, that the first thing I did was I said, move the piano there before I got on. Move it in the middle of the stage. Move that light, And then I did all of these tricks of my patter talk before the song, because you got to get the drunks. He said afterwards, even the drunks were listening to you. So it was a cute thing. But that was the old, before it burned down. That was the better blues club in Berkeley. Actually, I think it's in Berkeley. I think... Boy, I wish you could hear this with the country singer with a strong male singer voice. I like it. But anyway, I'm going to try it. It's a... A ring of emerald green. I travel such a long, long way just to see you one more time, and then I found you with a new love, and you became a memory, just a memory in my mind. The memory of how you promised me a ring. I will remember a ring of emerald green, the emblem of true love, symbol of eternity, a ring of emerald green, and how you promised me my love would be safe in your arms until I found you with a new love, and you became a memory, just a memory in my mind. I've heard those words that love is not forever. But I would never believe that it was true until I found you with a new love, and you became just a memory in my mind. I'll give some background music to that.
The question is, how did you find your style?
Oh, no, I didn't find a style that I guess it found me. Well, for instance, I was earning my living at writing when I was 23. When I came to Berkeley and met all these writers who knew me as a, right then I was doing a musical, they knew me as a musician. I didn't go around. They didn't find out for years that I was for a couple of years that I was writing, because I didn't come say, well, when I was 23, I was a full-time newspaper columnist and writer. And it's funny, when I remembered it recently, and I said, oh, wow, 23 years old, I had my style of writing then. There is something that comes, and I know many people hone and hone this. I'm not one of those kind of writers that, you know, in music, I mean, I had a lot of musical training, but who, for instance, with the words, for instance, the fact that I can do a page and it can be one sentence long, which other writers do use. No, well, who's the great writer who doesn't,
right.
Joyce and others who do that? I mean, it is a style. You don't say, in other words, you don't say to yourself, I'm going to write this long thing. I always had that style. And I would say that, of course, like anything else, you get better if you're writing, but it's still that I had my style set for my music, you know, maybe the music gave me some of that. But other people will study and study. They will. I talked to someone at Cody's reading the other day, and the conversation was a little bit limited because he's coming from a book place, you know, academic place, and I kept throwing other things in. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about the line. He was saying, which a lot of people have done, which is fine. It doesn't matter how you do it. Studying poetry by looking at others. Write a poem like Blake. Now write a poem like somebody, you know, so-and-so. And then pretty soon find your own style. And it's perfectly valid. They're just more, it's a different kind of thing. I always thought that was cheating. I mean, I always thought in music that if I deliberately, I should have planned to play that. And then on one song I deliberately, on a couple of things, then I had fun a few times just picking up a little thing that would remind me of a person like Mose Allison or something. But then I found out my music physician friends would always pick up some riff and copy it. But to me, it was sort of like must come out of my mind. But the music and the music style is a style, but it's been that way since the first thing I ever wrote was a whole musical. And it was the Timber musical. I wrote the songs years ago. And it began with a song I never changed a note of in all this, even though it was the first song I wrote. I just walked around singing it. But it was country-like. I mean, I had heard a lot of country music. But the wide-open style of doing, who knows where that comes from, the same as with the writing, because I didn't listen to, a lot. You can see a touch of Gilbert and Sullivan in lyrics that I want to do in doing musicals a little bit. But it isn't like I listened to him more. I listened to a lot of Irish music if one wanted to look for the influence, because we played that in country. I listened to a lot of classical music because my parents were both directors of bands and orchestras, and they knew much more than me. They knew every aria from every opera ever written, that kind of thing, that they just really knew music. But I don't remember ever listening. I feel like it comes from somewhere else in the atmosphere, because I was trying to just run out and play hard all the time and forced to play the piano for an hour a day. So you know the sounds you like, and they delight, you know. And the trouble, and my music would always be too different when I played to some very lovely people in Las Vegas. They liked it like you listened to this Ruthie Zinn. And of this very nice man, he starred at one of the shows there, and he was very liked my music and wanted to give it to other people. I was there with my friend Odia, but he said, well, that's weird. I mean, people would, you know. Now I talk to people that are the world far out people, like Steve Lacy, whom I got to go in here as his guest recently with Eileen Kaufman. He's the world's, you know, he's just the innovator of the world, just so wonderful on the trumpet, and a friend who died young recently is another one. It turns out I communicate with the people that are the most far out, even though it seems like I'm playing simple or, you know, romantic songs. But it's not like going to be ever that. The commercial people that would look at it would have a hard time figuring out, you know, what to do with it. But here were these people. And it's not they're looking for complicated things. The friend I was mentioning is Glenn Spearman. For instance, when I heard him at Mills College, he was a wonderful saxophone player, and he had this huge percussion, not only bass, but two full sets of drums, one of them the ex-Cage, John Cage drummer. I mean, he was just a trip to watch. So my friend brought, he was African-American, and he brought that to his music, but yet we clicked exactly on how we felt about music. I mean, in a surrealistic way, almost, I can't remember one of his statements I want to remember, but it's something like hearing music with no ears. I mean, you know, it's that crazy. I can't think of it, but he would, when I played my, I'll play this song, that when I played Lullaby for him, he said, now, you see, so that's what I love. And the same with Steve Lacy. Steve Lacy loves to take a simple monk melody, because then you can just build anything on it. So this is what Glenn felt. And I wondered why all my jazz musician friends had always, you know, they always reacted to this simple lullaby that was written for a musical. And then it suddenly changes key. That was the favorite, that one, the lullaby. Another one from That's Now, and You Take Things and Use Them Later, right? That's Now in my musical on The Young Life of Frederick Douglass. And there's a part from that musical I want to sing that's called Sparrow. I call it Sparrow for short, I think. But anyway, Sparrow. It's a point of the most lost, the most desolate. As most of you know, Frederick Douglass, the famous slave who escaped at the age, this is just when he's trying to make his escape at the age of 23 and went on to become an icon of Americans, black or white. But he went on to become very, very famous lecturer, speaker and newspaper man and abolitionist and fighting also for women's rights. So at this point, he's been through everything else, but there was nothing so desolate as to be lost in New York City, where he didn't dare eat, he didn't dare go to the wharf to get a job to look. New York was full of kidnappers then, and he had to wait for a message. He had to wait to be met there by a white abolitionist who was going to help him on his way to freedom. Didn't he who made the sparrow? Didn't he make me? Why doesn't he who made the sparrow? Why doesn't he come and see about me? Kidnappers and robbers In New York town, they will sell you for a dollar in the pocket. Penniless and homeless in New York town, New York town. Why doesn't he come and see about me? Well, didn't he? Lord, if you were ever going to jump in, now is the time. Lord, you know, like the bass, he just jumps in anywhere, anytime he wants to. Sunday morning and in the choir, Lord, if you were ever going to jump in, now is the time. Didn't he, who made the sparrow? Didn't he make me? Why doesn't he, who made the sparrow? Why doesn't he come and see about me? Do we want to do a poem? I just keep at the, you know, I once plugged in, it's hard.
Should you do a poem or just keep playing at the piano? C, read a you, poem? What? A, B,
oh, I meant to ask.
He wants you to read the poem that's in TCR.
Oh, okay. Listen, I wanted to read. I was planning to read all the TCR poems you did. I only brought the trumpet player, and I was going to look for what's going on and for Billy. I want to do Billy. Have you got the one that has Billy in it?
Yeah.
Oh, they're surprising. This is the carrot that got me over here to get my TCR. I had to play all that piano. Now I got my magazine. Okay, good. Oh, everybody's famous. I haven't even looked at that since I read it. Oh, I mean, hardly. Oh.
Do you have enough light, Jesse?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, you're waiting for me to read it. Okay.
No.
Admire.
Yeah, I'm just admiring the. Okay, these are drawings of me. There's the long hair, the glasses, and well, anyway.
Some nice cleavage.
Cleavage.
And,
Oh, that's lovely. Okay. Let's see, for the poet, I sort of stand up for poetry.
Yeah,
is there a way? Oh, there it goes. Pictured along. Is that me? Oh, that's okay, then. Thank you. Thank you, Mikey. This is called Everybody's Famous, and I performed it for the party, the reading celebrating Frank Moore's zine at Modern Times Bookstore. That's when he surprised me with the Jesse Farm. Everybody's Famous. Everybody's famous, the composer said, remembering the words of the opera tenor. No, the critic answered. I mean the woman who performs at Paradise Lounge is really famous. She was on KPFA. Her name was in the Express. It all began when someone important said that she was famous, but how can you tell? When a name is a really big name, not just a name like Frank Moore, you know, but an accepted in Marble Hall's fame name. Visual, nude-less art accepted on the all-white walls of a Jesse Helms castle fame. Art that is annotated. Art about which someone wearing a success suit, you know what I mean, a success suit, Brooks Brothers, will say, don't you know this artist is no longer associated with St. Francis Ragamuffins. He has become somebody. The next step is, she says that he says that she's famous, and so it was in all the land. And now she says she's famous, and a talk show host says she's famous. For what? Well, for manufacturing music. It must be contemporary because it's odd enough, isn't it? From recorded sounds, and, you know, she uses recording sounds that she does on a, like a synthesizer. And she has a cute name. That's the main thing. It only takes a catchy name and one person in the industry to start a myth. You, too, can be among the maybe not rich, but famous. There's millions like you. It's nothing. But here's the question. How about, say, the heart? And what about, say, the soul? Which game would you rather play? Here, pick a role. Say you had your fill of fame or as a little girl or a little boy. It just doesn't mean that much. A little girl, a little boy, or somewhere in between, you know. But anyway, it just doesn't mean that much anymore. Kind of a bore. You were adored. You had show-off time riding bikes. No hands on the handlebars as a child. Applauded, trotted out at an early age to be sat, like me, almost disappearing with pigtails, into the large piano bench at a grand piano as a child performer. You had that thrill of fame. But running wild in the woods, for me, was more fun. No, you don't need the fame game, but you do need the passion of the art itself. Turning yourself inside out over and over to disgorge the magic tricks. Turning your talents physically on their head many times against the tide of possibilities for the passion to create. Or you can choose to be an acclaimed author with no new books. You can still talk about the last one because the role of fame takes all your time, and you don't really write anymore. Picasso said it was better before the fame came. That's when life was really nice. Jung said, it's the struggle. Don't arrive. Don't get there. Don't contemplate. Don't complete. Rather, don't complete the house quite. Don't reach that fame. Keep paddling upstream and hear the gushes running of the rapids, dangerous rocks all around you, upstream. But for some, it's the quiet pool
the elegant white tie, black tux, riding on a ghost pony, a white, many-muscled, prancing horse named Fame. Ride him to the grave or choose the underground and say, count me in, which is the next song I'll do. Count me in with the truly non-famous and count me in with the homeless and the hard-working family in West Oakland. Count me in with the sinners, Lord knows I've sinned. Count me in with the artists whose very lives are a work of art. Tapestries of bold, bright threads that scream when it isn't popular to scream. Count me in with those who paddle upstream and love it. Count me in with those who give 1,000% for the privilege to create, for the need to create, for the joy to create, for the clay in your hands, for the words in your pen, for sound in your voice, for those who held your hand in toughest times. For those who went before you, inspiring you, becoming you, and still with you, fame goes to the seekers of fame, drowning in fame, incesting their fame. Don't knock it. They need it. And bless them if they can handle it. I choose the underground, the people who are my kind of people, who are in my blood. I was born to be a rebel, to be on the other side, to be with the poorest, to be with the questioners, to be with the raggledy-taggledy run sheep runners and kick the canners who never grew up, who don't want to be bored with grown-ups and proper tuxedos. Thank you. Well, thank you for reminding. This is a total surprise because I didn't even imagine what poem, and I forgot about this poem. Thanks for introducing me to my own poem in such a beautiful, beautiful way for this great edition, which I will love. I want, Mikey, do you think you could find Billy? It was in, good.
Did you get it, Mikey?
Yeah. Oh, great. And we had a request, I think I mentioned to you, we had Ralphie, who, would, as I said, love a guy with a name like Ralphie. Ralph of Lucid Moon, which is a beautiful, the poem is beautiful that he wrote with that same title. But anyway, he's publishing What's Going On, so that was exciting, which I wrote for... I don't know if I'll be reading that now, depending on if I get a copy. I didn't also get that copy. What's Going On was just off the top of my head. The first night I met Frank, when he was performing, Linda Mack was there, Mikey, and Alexi, and a couple of other people I know. It was called just the best series in the Bay Area. They were so eclectic. And Jack loved the whole idea and that there was going to be some nudity. And he put up some draperies, kind of. It was the upstairs portion of the cafe, and there were drapes put up. And I think, as I recall it, Frank, that Frank said, there won't be any... nudity in the performance, so he put the nudity before the performance. Wasn't that right?
We were nude in the performance, but we got completely undressed in front of everybody, so we were nude before the performance.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So there. Yeah, before and after, see, the performance was clean, but anyway, no, it was love. It was an event that was very moving, and Linda came and had me meet Frank and talk to him, which we had a meeting shortly after that, which two strange things happened. The timelessness of my meeting alone with Frank, mind you, I'm not used to. So he's talking with a pointer and his board, And but we were, it was very exciting that he set up this meeting. And but I want to go back to, we all enjoyed that performance very much. And I went and wrote what it had, how it had affected me. In is it in this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I said, and it had been this kind of a, I've lost the page now, kind of a help from Mike, a kind of an experience. And I was very glad that Frank liked that. And then briefly on this, the two things that strike me about meeting, and this is across from, this I felt very happy about. It comes in the TCR, which is number, which volume one, issue one. I'm in volume one. Oh, hooray. And it's across from the wonderful New York photographer did this great photo of them in New York. So, but in that short short visit, that was one of the two points. I visited with Frank, and I thought we'd been visiting a short little while, and it was 3 or 4 hours. The time just stood still. The second thing was, and this is really true, he would just start to point out a sentence, and I'd have the whole sentence. We were talking a mile a minute, you know, really, really. It was just the great happening. Something's going on. Frank Moore at Cafe Milano series, June 5th, 1988. The patrons at Cafe Milano took the stairs two at a time. What on earth was going on upstairs? An orgy? Strange sounds and curtains sealing off the Sunday night poetry, where some said poets, gay and straight, famous and infamous and slightly known, ranted and raved, but never like this. Some spoke softly, beautiful imagery. One man bellowed, that's my friend, Edmund. Didn't need a microphone, but we paid them no mind. We came to Cafe Milano for coffee. Let the mad poets have the upstairs, we pay them no mind. Until tonight, is it an orgy? From the sound of it, from the secrecy, drawn curtains, something's going on. What a disappointment. What are they doing? I was just having coffee downstairs and came to look. You look, you pay, said Adele. 2 minutes passed after the downstairs patrons paid. Then came a hasty retreat from this celebration of life, a cacophony of people, musical, interwoven, a pulsating silver montage, literally entwined with the poet. They were the poet, Frank, sorcerer of innocence. I am old-fashioned, he said, weaving a silver montage. And one playful child emerged, one. A silver montage and cinematic intermittent flashes of flesh. And joy, the soul of the poem revealed as the words were spoken. The audience of now one became a lover, a child, a baby held in love. I did, and they printed my note at the bottom of this. An evening of poetry by Frank Moore, performed through dance, touching, sound flickering light, strips of cellophane and shiny oil wrappings, and nudity, slightly amended for Cafe Milano. Sensuous, womb-like, beyond sex. Aeroplay, he calls it. What's going on? You know, that's the trouble with poetry, is that that pretty soon you put everything, like I had to go home and write a poem. Everything becomes a poem. But I was moved to do that, yeah. And this had a certain inspiration too. And wonderful, I love the way that that Mikey set this up. It just, it's called None Coming Near Your Voice, Billy. And I could use the piano player on that. Corey. Now, it means something to me to tell you. I do want to say what made me write this. I'm reading two poems in a row. The first one, because I was inspired in a good way by the people, I went home and wrote What's Going On. This one I went home mad as hell, writing about the person that made a comment about Billy Holiday. Had read a young man read what he thought he was hip. There's nothing worse. He thought he was hip. Thought he was white, and that's all right. But you know, he thought he was hip, and he's going to be cool. And so he's talking about Billy, whom I love. Billy Holiday, and if he really was pretend hip. So he's just talking about the heroin. That's all he's talking about. Billy and the heroin. Billy. And I went home, and the words I said when I went home are not in the poem, but what inspired the poem was what I said when I got home, which was, eat your heart out that you could have had Billie Holiday's life. She was loved. I knew enough about, and you know, if I hadn't walked one foot in the black world in my doing music with them, I wouldn't be, and understanding the hard life that the ones that traveled did, and so on and so forth, and to understand the racial things she went through, and all the awful things. But I knew her to be sweet, and the musicians that worked with her loved her, and it's like to want to pick something from someone's life. It's as if that greatness didn't live, as if she didn't enjoy every minute of her own great singing. Anyway, someone played your record. I didn't say, who was that? Beyond singing, I didn't say, who was that? Beyond singer, I didn't say, who was that? I said, what was that? Like the first time I saw a Rodriguez sculpture and said, that can't be a sculpture. Is it an artifact, dead, yet living? Billy's sculpting sound like nobody's sound. You could hear Bessie Ma Rainey Leadbelly. She left nobody's sound out, but turned them inside out. Shipped the notes like loaded dice, exploding dice, tugging them inside out on a drawstring from her pure and holy black soul, wholly giving it up. Only sweetness will come out of your mouth. It was written on saxophone riffs. Little girl sounds will come out of your mouth, high, sweet sounds. It was written on half triple beat of a conga drum, Tin Pan Alley songs in elegant satin. You're the writer's dream. It was written on the New Orleans, take it up their higher cry note of a funeral march and clarinet set to carry back to old Virginny, down the Mississippi on a gambling boat with the rambling trombone, mellow tone sliding slyly over, nearly under, almost into the whole note in your throat, Billy. Giving it all up. Only sweetness will come out of your mouth. It was written on saxophone riffs. What a difference a day makes, Billy. Billy, in your day, what a difference, what difference did it make? Who mistook the odds? The gods were yours as much as any badge-wearing, southern-swearing New York cop. But you didn't quit. Quit on love. People, music, people, you still gave it all in innocence. Just born innocence, which lays in many stranger places than false pedestals. Not a stranger to whorehouses, jazz, pure all night long in the whorehouse, giving birth to the blues, baby shoes hanging from the chandelier, jazz in the night, trombone. Mellow tone sliding slightly over, nearly under, almost into the whole note in your throat, Billy. Jazz in the night in your throat, Billy.
Let's do something else that's jazz. Jazz. Here. have a mic. Let's see. Curry and I have had some fun working performing together.
That's for sure. And in fact, how many did I read? What did I read with? Oh, the first one. That's all right. Because I was going to do all the poems with you, whether they were our jazz poems or not. Because we did that. We did that recently for my optometrist, and Heidi was there, and Corey and Alexi, and he just, we didn't rehearse. He just played behind, you know, everything. Should be doing America? What is our time?
It's 10:11.
So I think I'll read the last. All these things. I can't look at them. And okay, this is called The Last Supper. A rare 7-inch steak. Mashed potatoes with country milk gravy, rolls with real butter, and no vegetables, and banana ice cream with hot fudge sauce, and a bowl of fresh strawberries on the side. I don't have to worry about gaining weight. They are coming after me soon. They are coming after me at 6 a.m. They are killing me, but they are killing me softly. Killing me softly with a gentle injection, lulled to sleep first with a mild injection, when pleasantly asleep, I'll be given the final thrill, leaving the victims tasting blood. They believe it's their salvation by the blood of the slaughtered lamb, an eye for an eye, salvation through vengeance. March on, ye victims of the world. March back in time, an eye for an eye, but not I. I forgive them. When they discover, and they will, I didn't do the crime, I hope they'll remember the Last Supper. Jesus beside me, our hands nailed to the cross. I said a prayer. Remember that I said it. I hope they'll remember the Last Supper. Jesus beside me, our hands nailed to the cross. I said a prayer. Remember that I said it. Without vengeance. Remember that I left this world in a bliss of forgiveness. Breaking a bread, a crust from some soldier, with Jesus side by side, nails through our hands. They're coming now. It's over. I can't complain. They gave me everything I asked for, even the bowl of strawberries. That was after the next to last, I guess. Execution and the diet. I might be pleased to report that they keep going on with this menu. The last Babbitt, who left at the age of 50 just the other day, executed with our new governor stalwartly standing. See, I said I'm for the death penalty, and I mean it. He's gotten rid of two. How long has he been in? He's gotten rid of two. Yes, and every appeal was made. This was a very sticky wicket about Babbitt, his whole background, and so Babbitt refused the Last Supper. Babbitt said no to the food. I think that's significant. Who wants the Last Supper? Let's see. While he's doing that.
It took him 15 minutes to die.
Yes, it was the whole thing was, and it's you know, we're in Well, it should come to us as no surprise that we are in this barbaric state, you know. I mean, in a second, we're in this blame society, you know, and trapped the politicians, trapped in by the until the money change, till the way that they're elected, nothing will change. You know, they're just it shouldn't be. Well, Frank. Nothing. Frank won't be disillusioned because he knows what's happening in this. But usually the it's hard for the little people to understand. There is not a feeling up here with the people pulling the strings. You know what countries do with each other when they're planning. Let's see, shall we bomb there and shall we? It's like a chess board and game. And that is played, but it's so easy for us. We want to believe someone when they come on I'm preaching. They want to come. Someone comes on the television and says, "Really, this is a matter of humanitarianism," and it appeals to us. You know what I mean? We're going to save some lives, but in the example that always comes to me is in the great film. The trial of Nuremberg and Spencer Tracy, they picked a great judge in order to have, I come from the mid, my family are from Midwesterners, they wanted someone honest and, you know, unshakable, and they got this Midwestern judge for the trial at Nuremberg. And he goes through all this whole thing sincerely, and right toward the end of it, this is how games are played with country, this is how politics is played. We take something serious as a heart attack, as they say, you know. I mean, we're serious, the little people, serious as can be. And up here, the people pulling the strings, near the end of the trial at Nuremberg, someone from the United States comes and whispers in the judge's ears, "Well, now, things are changing now, so you have to take a different tack. We've made friends now. I mean, we're on a friendly basis with what we're dealing with Germany." So, you know, that's always my example of this is a game that's played. That's a good time to do America then.
right. Let's see if I can find the pages.
Maybe you guys should.
Okay.
Should we stand there?
This is a short version of. I kind of told everything in a long 13-page thing, I think, about America. This is a short version of America 1. There are two America poems. And I'll be accompanied by... Oh, I haven't got the third page.
Yeah.
What... Page one. Okay, here we are. Oh, I'm not finding the right pages to America. I need some help here. I need someone to take over the first line to talk for. Alexei, you can tell stories about me. Feel free. Make a. Yesterday's afternoon.
You're listening to Love Underground Vision Radio.
Shaman's Den, the Shaman's Den with Frank Moore. And guest Dorothy Jesse Beagle.
Okay,
DJ Beagle's in the house.
I found the missing page.
Jesse found the missing page.
Are you on the page? Oh, okay, thank you. Hi. Back with the right three pages. I'm looking at Lyndon. It's just like a scene from Alice in Wonderland. There's something about that. Oh, you know, when they're carrying the pig. I mean, the cat isn't that big, but I mean, you know, when the baby turned into a pig, that was it. Yeah, that image just came to my mind, seeing this great and beautiful, long, huge cat in your arms. But anyway, America.
Thank you.
In the 50s, we talked about this day in America that we saw coming. We didn't turn to Russia, and we didn't turn to God. We thought just being American was enough. We loved the best in America, hated the racism, even then tearing apart the nation, and tried to make changes. We hated the history, the casual genocide that made this country ours, but we loved who we thought we were, the people of America, who could change America, who with the labor of our hands built America. Immigrants from many lands and those we stole this country from, and those in bondage who never chose to come, here we are, bound together in swaddling clothes. America, a toddler, walking a crooked line and sometimes falling down. Corporate cats, fat and still hungry, biding their time. Waiting for decades. We can wait, they said. We're getting more little people on our side who think they are part of the we crowd and not part of the expendable they crowd. They, the homeless, no longer part of we, the people. They, the African American, the Hispanic, the Indian, never were part of we, the people. They, those people on welfare and food stamps who might have been yesterday's affluent neighbor. In the 50s, my friends and I talked about this day when people would be driven by fear as the worm-infested underbelly of the society would become increasingly exposed. When people would look desperately for fairy tale solutions, the powers that be selecting the designated scapegoats, trailing them before the dazed and frightened citizens like berry leaves tricking a bunny into the briar patch, saying, we can wait to bring the unions down. We can wait to widen the gulf between the rich and the poor, with the ghost of a middle class still hovering in between, with some of the poor holding a tiny, shredded corner of the American dream security blanket in the small pink fist of their baby hand, still saying, Mommy won't abandon me. I'm 100% American baby. Immigrants from many lands, and those we stole the country from, and those in bondage who never chose to come. Here we are, bound together in swaddling clothes. America, a toddler walking a crooked line and sometimes falling down. If necessary, begin at the beginning. The beginning of unions. The beginning of sweat and blood. And marching and dying for the right to a decent life for everyday man, the dignity of hard work and a life you call your own. For worse than the life on the street, homeless will say, worse than the cold and the hunger are the times we are denied dignity. But they don't give up. We find courage from the homeless. It's you and it's me, one paycheck away from the homeless. But we don't give up. We'll start again at the beginning of unions if we have to, if that's what it takes. We'll boycott cars and walk in the streets by the thousands if that's what it takes, before we'll see every man's family go hungry and worse, to see every man and woman left without a dream. Without a dream. There was always the dream, America. Take away the hope of the everyday man. You've got a tiger by the tail, America. Recognize the choreography of violence and hatred for what it is. A divide and conquer plan that got out of control. Even Big Brother is running scared. We take courage in our history. In the indomitable spirit of Americans, taking seriously the words of the people, by the people, and for the people, recognize the false images planted in the cells of our brain by media. And remember that the national anthem today is "My Country, 'Tis of Me, Me, Me." Recognize the climate of fear that led America to consider putting 12-year-olds to death so that we might speak as one voice to stop the destruction of America. Of the people, by the people, and for the people, and for the people eroded and still standing, America. Of the people, by the people, and for the people, America. We, the people, America. We, the people, America. Thank you very much. Thank you, my wonderful. America. Yes, very. When I wrote that, 1994, it was just when things were starting to tilt, really tilt in this country. So that when I first wrote this very long and very more indicting in that, because the long version tells of, you know, the great school of the Americas teaching to how to torture to the South Americans and so on. I mean, it really was an indictment. And then the other version, which you heard first, one of the first people to hear it, which when Frank and I were reading and I did the pimp whore version of America and the big daddy big bucks and the money. But when I wrote those, they seemed very, I said, oh my God, am I going to really read this in public? But things have gotten, we've been through so much since then. They're, you know, it's not that... really, what's the word? Right when I was doing it, what am I saying here? But you know, I felt it, you know, that it had to be said, I guess, for some reason. So I went all around reading about America. This is a. This would be such a different tone. What other music was I thinking?
Thanks. Oh, Frank wants you to promote your show on Lover.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, I was thinking about it. Of course, you know, and list some things that are coming up. And so that's been in the back of my mind. And... oh, now for the one on, yes, I see what you mean. On this, oh well, this coming Wednesday will be a show based on, oh, no, I'm not doing that one this week. That's what would confuse me there. Okay, I'm doing Claire Gray, but not this week. Okay. I'm doing a program which includes a long discussion, of course, with my dear friend, with Roland Hill, who's very good thinker. He's a, what is the term? We have the best title for him, and I guess, you know, logic. Okay, logician. He's a logician, not magician, but logician. And so we have a long discussion about just, you know, what's the answer to the universe, life, and all of that kind of thing. And then with it, since it'll be a program of friends, because he's my friend, and it'll be other friends singing from years back, tapes that are, I'm still playing Margot singing and Odia singing, some of my dear friends singing on tape.
And it's
at 6 o'clock on Wednesday, 6 to 8.
Jesse's full pantry.
And it's Jesse's full pantry. See, I had. They didn't. They're giving away the fact that. See, I'm a puppet, and they have to. I'm really a puppet. My programming was running down, I guess. But anyway. And this, maybe this is appropriate. And I'm not a clone either, though, really, or a puppet, but this is called Just Cloning Around.
Can I play with
you? Yeah. Yes, please. since time began, man, I'm going to blame it all on men, and male competition wanted to be one, blaming it on also male competition, man wanted to be one up on God. If God could do it in Eden, I can do it in Berkeley, he said. Since time began, man has yearned for the secret of life. I'll create life, then we won't need God. If God could do it in Eden, I could do it in Berkeley, he said. But it took a Scot, conserving, penny-pinching, I'm part Scot myself, I'm entitled, to find such a bargain of two for the price of one. And finally, the cloning of man is on the near horizon. Man, since time began, sent subversives to spy on God, and from their classified records, geneticists wove the strands of micro-information, patiently weaving, saying, does anyone know if God is Virgo? So obsessed with minutia. Start with a huge group of animals. Take that down to one little animal. Take that down to one little cell. And when you reach the tiniest cell, it pops open like an inflated balloon, looking very much like everything else in the universe and all the little tiny ingredients, each with a thinking mind of their own. God, the geneticist said, was a sucker for detail. That was great. Thank you. Thank you, Corey.
This, did you want to see that?
Yeah. This is something from...
U-A-R-A-B, kicking her out soon. Okay. he's kicking you out soon, he said.
What?
He said he's kicking you out soon.
Oh.
He did a little emotional, but that it's for real.
What does this mean?
Does that mean we should wrap it up? Mm. A, B, C, D, E, F, A, E, I, 5 more minutes? 5 more minutes.
Oh, okay. Probably I'll do maybe a song to end that up with. Pearl. What was this lesson? I know you wanted to hear My Man Blues, I suppose. I was going to do either Te Quiero Mucho, Loving is a Lot of Candy. I guess I have to do My Man, huh? My Man Blues.
Yeah.
Back to the piano here. Jesse said, I'll take the blame, I'll take the blame. It's just a fact of life if you're a doggone wife. Mm-hmm. My man was out.
I don't remember how I got to that part.
That's really funny. Many times as I've sung this song. Well, somehow we get to a place where my man is trying to make an excuse for not being at home. So he says, I was just out taking care of business and there wasn't a phone within 100 miles. Jesse said, I'll take the blame. Just a fact of life, you're a doggone one. Then my man, he said, well, now, darling, now wait just a minute. He said, I never even look at another woman. Jesse said, I'll take the blame. Just a fact of life, you're a doggone one. Well, you know, darling, there ain't nothing wrong with just talking to another woman. Jesse said, when I was 3 and on my mama's knee, she said, baby Jesse, listen carefully. Now when a man, he stays out all night overnight. When a man, he stays out all night overnight. He ain't talking to no woman. He ain't talking to no woman. He ain't talking to no woman till the broad daylight. So you know what I did then? Jessie took out her Luger and took a careful aim. She shot her lover down, crying, I'll take the blame. It's just a fact of life, you're a doggone one. Now my man, he don't say out all night anymore. My man, he don't say out all night anymore. Ain't that a shame, ain't that a doggone shame. My man, Blues Art, don't mess with Jess. Thank you very much. It's been great. What a great, wonderful audience, I must say.
Wow.
So good night from from Jesse. No, this isn't Jesse's show at all. I mean, good night from Jesse. I'm beginning to see it as.
Jesse's whole pantry. Don't know. This isn't Jesse's show.
But I'll see you Wednesday on my show, which is On Lover, which is at 6 o'clock on Wednesday.
Yeah. All right.
And thank you for inviting me.
was talking to the judge just before we left the countryside. He saw paper in his hand, bound to find a way. Tried to rough it out, well, now got it all around. Tore the pages up before they brought the curtain down. I remember the day the drum shined on hustle, when you couldn't hear a bird, it would make a nice sound. They were trying to muscle in an easy way to bring the money in. You were puking up your guts when you looked at the standard contract you just signed. Prostitution on the run, except when it was solicited. Tried to drain them all dry, got hung up by the rope. Magazines and books, clearly undefinable. Wipe the clean slate and to pull the rug from under deep of feet. I remember the day the drum shambo hustle, when you couldn't hear no birds, cause they were making out a sound. They were trying to muscle in the recording and the publishing. You are puking up your guts when you read the kind of contract you just signed. All right! Hooker by the neck, read your town cards and astronomy. Yeah, I want to get your stars, but don't know your sign. It was taking time to get the message through, look. But with a hand down, shake you one and a little five teeth ran no sound more cut up. I remember the day a drum shambo hustle, couldn't hear on bird, Lord, you couldn't hear no sound. And we're trying to muscle in on the gigs on the recording and the publishing. You were puking up your guts when you read the standard contract you just signed. You were puking up your guts when you read the standard contract that you signed. You were puking up your guts when you read the standard contract you just signed.
We Nothing on this, baby.